No, you tell it.
No, you.
I'm not telling it.
You should totally tell it.
Well, you should tell it.
No, you tell it. No, You Tell It is a series that switches up the storytelling. So each performer writes a true life tale and then, switching with a partner, performs the other person's story, giving everyone involved the chance to share their own stories and experience someone else's. Today's Two on Tuesday stories were performed live at Jimmy's Number 43 as part of our wild card show, Lucky at Cards, Unlucky in Love. Can you be unlucky at both? And what if the cards are being dealt by a psychic? Her story, All in the Cards, was the first time writer Shelley Gaze's work was performed live. But we are happy to say it wasn't the last. Shelley's come back to take part in our alumni events and perform her own stories at the Moth. Give a listen to the story that started it all, performed here by Nelson Lugo.
All in the Cards? I found the first psychic the same way I found a salon, a masseuse, and rock climbing. Through Groupon. I'd never visited a psychic before. I told friends only that I thought it would be an interesting experience. When I showed them the advertised psychic's website, I poked fun at her promise of, "Here you will find truth, real answers to real problems, with 99% accuracy and never failing success." But there was more. 2 months following a breakup, I felt open to new paths, but also off-center. Though neither spiritual nor new agey, part of me wanted to discard logic and believe that maybe there was some way to foresee my course. So I purchased a $45 combo psychic tarot consultation at Muna's Spiritual Reading Room. On a gray December afternoon, I climbed a steep staircase in a musty building in Rye, New York. There was an open door at the top, through which an overwhelming aroma of Marlboros wafted. Entering the dim room, I noticed a generic Thomas Kincaid-like tapestry above the cabinet that had a lighter and a full ashtray, shelves of crystals, and windows covered by fabric that looked more like bedsheets than curtains. This was Mona's spiritual reading room. Hardly the incense-filled celestial retreat with pan flute music piped in that I somehow envisioned. Muna herself was a rather round woman, whose accent seemed a blend of all five boroughs, far from the ethereal hippie that I pictured. I wondered if she was gypsy, though Westchester is hardly a hub of gypsy operations. I handed her my Groupon voucher and sat down in a dusty brown recliner. "I will need a personal object and your full birthday, including the time you were born." I unhooked the necklace I'd been wearing every day for a month and told her, "June 3rd, 1983, 3:40 a.m. She didn't ask for any other information, not even my name, and I said nothing else until the end of the reading. She pushed a worn deck of tarot cards across the table between us. "Shuffle the deck and place it into three piles, then pick one." After tapping the pile I wanted, Muna instructed, "You may think of a question you want answered, but don't ask this question out loud." I had heard from an acquaintance who had frequented psychics that you have to ask the question out loud. Those were the rules. But Muna only wanted me to think of it. Was she truly intuitive? Would the deck alone reflect what was in my heart? Intrigued, I wondered, what was the right path? After arranging the cards, Muna wrapped both her hands around my necklace, resting it on her moon-shaped belly, and slowly lowered her head. During the reading, she never once looked at me. Tilting her head to the side, she said, "You're going to the doctor soon." "So what? It's cold and flu season." "A gynecologist. But this is routine. You will be healthy." The pauses she took between words added a dramatic flair, making the scene more of a performance of sorts. But My checkup was already scheduled for a month later. Interesting. Mona shifted in her seat. You have a very strong exterior, but inside, you're mashed potatoes. Sensitive. You're a steady shoulder for others to lean on, but you don't confide in many people. She was right. When I was 5, I locked myself in a bathroom to quietly cry alone rather than admit to anyone how sad I was after seeing The Land Before Time. Between the death of the main character's mother by a Tyrannosaurus that spent the rest of the movie trying to kill all the other dinosaurs, along with the specter of extinction hanging over the whole thing. From then on, I continued bristling at the idea of letting go in front of other people. I revisited revealing vulnerability instead of building a wall of stubborn pride, and stoicism, sarcasm. But in the last 2 months, that wall had crumbled. I'd initiated the breakup, but was surprised not only at how raw I felt, but by how much I doubted that I made the right choice. Wrapping the necklace's chain around my finger, Mona diagnosed a particular problem of mine. You're spiritually constipated. After another thoughtful pause, she wrinkled her brow. You've lost your mojo. You feel you've reached a plateau, but many things will present themselves. Gesturing toward the chariot card, often associated with the idea of conquest, you shouldn't be scared or skeptical. The coming year is a time to unmask yourself. Become who you need to be. She knows my birthday, and that I'm approaching 30. Lots of people plateau before 30. Is that just a good guess? Mona had specific predictions. In February, there'd be a new career opportunity. In March, I'd meet a man, not an online thing, who would become a close friend and then a great romance. In the spring, I'd sign legal documents involving money. In August, there'd be a wedding I would not want to attend. And in 3 weeks, you'll receive a phone call from a man. Someone who things ended badly with. It won't be romantic, but he'll reach out because you have information he knows is useful. 3 weeks. My ex-boyfriend's birthday was in 3 weeks. Would he call? Though, why would he call me on his birthday? Mona squeezed my necklace tighter. Forgive me for saying, but not too lucky in love, eh? It was a punch in the gut. And I felt kind of insulted by her frankness. She pointed to the card depicting a man hunched beneath a pile of sticks on his back. You're carrying many burdens and past hurts when it comes to love. When you love, it tends to be with all your heart and soul. That's why you get so hurt. Let the past be the past so you can move on. I tried to keep a poker face, or tarot face. Come on. Let the past be the past is so general, and countless people are burdened with issues of love. Still, if this was a performance, it was a good one. There was a rising lump in my throat, and I looked at my lap, trying to blink away the welling in my eyes. No one knew I'd been crying. Sobbing, actually. Regularly over a relationship that had lasted only months, but that had removed a stopper in the drain. I cried more in 60 days than in 29 years combined, stuck in a cycle of replaying the last weekend we'd spent together. How I wanted to say, I love you, for the first time, but never did. And how, through a combination of our shared stubbornness and fears, we'd unraveled as swiftly as we connected in the first place. Now a backed up line was bubbling up. I wanted to figure out how to ease the flood without rebuilding the wall, and any sliver in my mind had hoped someone could just simply tell me how to do that. Muna raised her head. That's all I see today. That's it? No card to tell me how to let the past be in the past? Where was the truth, real answers to my real problems? Muna gave me a pamphlet about Reiki healing. This, she advised, would prove beneficial for my energies. Apparently, Reiki is spiritual dokkan. Though her smoky room was the last place I choose for energy cleansing. She also gave me a frequent visitor card. Buy 5 readings, get the 6th free. I felt as though someone had just turned me inside out and shoved me on my way. I did have that doctor's appointment, as predicted, but 3 weeks came and went with no phone call. As time went on, Muna's predictions turned out to be about 50-50. In the spring, I bought an apartment, which required many legal documents involving money. There were some career opportunities. And there was a wedding in August, though it was one I wanted to go to. But there was no new friendship that developed into a great romance. Her observations, on the other hand, general as they have been, had resonated and stayed with me. They served to hold up a mirror. Don't be too skeptical. Unmask yourself. Things will present themselves. In a way, being turned inside out by a relationship and by Muna was what I needed. In creating that wall, I'd locked myself on the sidelines for a while, watching life go by as my passions had become things I used to do. In the months following Muna, I got to work on unmasking myself, pushing beyond my comfort zone, hammering at the shell I'd ensconced myself in. 2 years later, I'd stayed open to new possibilities, and I had been more open with myself and others. I found myself waking in the middle of the night with an overwhelming urge to take a plunge. But into what? I couldn't see yet. One Saturday in July, during a weekend trip to Rhode Island, I stopped in a town called Wickford. Nestled between antique shops and nautical-themed boutiques was the Grateful Heart, a New Age store with a sign by the front door advertising Sunday tarot readings. The next morning I called, gave my first name, and booked a 2 o'clock slot. I was curious not only what the cards might show this time, but whether another psychic would read me differently. When I arrived for my appointment, a woman led me to the foot of a steep staircase and called up, "Maribeth, Shelley's here." A middle-aged woman appeared at the top of the steps and with a smile waved me up. The room was comfortable and bright, more inviting than Muna's. I sat across from Maribeth at a small table covered with purple crushed velvet cloth. Her hair was half up and hung half down over her peasant blouse in a way that didn't seem entirely intentional. However, her disarray was comforting. She seemed normal. She shuffled the tarot deck and fanned out the cards face down in front of me. Pick 10, then place them in a pile in front. She turned the cards over one by one, laying them in a traditional arrangement. I'd once again drawn the burdened man. In this deck, he was hunched beneath 7 swords rather than sticks. Maribeth rubbed a clear crystal in her right hand while studying the cards. There's a lot about career here. Are you a teacher or an educator? No. It was nice that Maribeth was engaging me in dialogue rather than talking at me. I'm seeing, very strongly, great potential for working with children. I love volunteering for kids. I admit it. Volunteering at writing workshops for children during the last year had sparked an interest that I'd never realized I had. I don't see you happy with teaching something general, like fifth grade. It has to be specific, a particular niche. She paused. Are you familiar with ESL training and its material? I raised my eyebrows and nodded. I work for an educational publisher that produces ESL material. I see impatience in what you currently do. Are you bored? Yes! None of the career pursuits in the last year have turned out successfully. I had a sense of outgrowing my current position, wondering with increasing frequency whether I should make a complete switch. She pointed to a pope-like figure preaching to two disciples. The Hierophant, she said, indicates education, knowledge. It represents taking all you have learned and using it to lead others. Maribeth then gestured to the Seven of Pentacles, a man looking down at seven gold coins. You are trying to determine how to apply the knowledge you have gathered. It won't be a sudden change. You'll take more and more onto your plate until you are able to blend things into the right path for you. In the last year, I had pursued more. Volunteering, mentoring, photography, writing, with the goal of reclaiming my passions and finding what clicked on a deeper level. Her observations held up that mirror again. And I felt I was at least looking in the right direction. I then pointed at the burdened man. I drew that card 2 years ago. She nodded knowingly. The Seven of Swords. This card was next to the Ten of Swords, a rather unpleasant looking depiction of a man face down on the ground with 10 swords stuck in his back. Maribeth tapped it. I feel as though you've been stabbed in the back or hurt before, repeatedly. Her finger hovered over the Seven of Swords. You carry fears about the same thing happening again. Maribeth gestured to two cards on the outer edges of the arrangement, the Knight of Cups and the King of Cups. Interesting that you drew these two related cards. Circling her finger around the Seven of Swords, you have fears from a past unsuccessful relationship, but you find yourself drawn to the same kinds of people, which brings out those same qualities in you that you do not want to repeat. This cycle might make you think you're not good at relationships, but it's just that you keep choosing the same kind of person. Of course, Maribeth didn't know that several months earlier, I felt drawn back toward the man I'd ended the relationship before my visit with Muna. Despite knowing he was now completely unavailable to me. And for the last month, I'd been dating a man who, as I learned more about him, seemed increasingly similar to that ex, down to their birthdays being one day apart. I had been feeling familiar uncertainties, thinking maybe I was just unlucky in love. Maribeth rubbed the crystal. You're still held back. she said, as though she somehow knew details about my last reading. I feel like you just have to close your eyes, hold your breath, and take that step forward, like jumping into a pool. But I don't know how to swim, I thought. At the end of the reading, Maribeth didn't try to sell me additional services, leaving me only with her parting words of wisdom: things will come together if you let them. I was hopeful. Still, I tossed in bed that night. How could I let the scattered pieces come together if I couldn't even see how they were meant to fit? Muna and Maribeth had both accurately determined my character and conflicts, and Maribeth had been reassuring, but neither could tell me exactly what to expect. The path was mine alone to build, and I knew the next leap was coming. I rolled onto my back, and then I closed my eyes, and I took a breath.
Now, switching it up, magician Nelson Lugo's one-man shows feature sleight of hand and are full of heart as he interweaves magic with storytelling. We were honored to have him come develop this deeply personal tale with us about magic, mental institutions, and the miracle of a well-made cookie. Here is Crazy Sad, written by Nelson Lugo and performed by Shelley Gazes.
Crazy Sad. Do you know what Kintsukuroi is? I am Kintsukuroi. Well, no, I'm a magician by trade, but metaphorically, I am totally Kintsukuroi. Kintsukuroi is a method of Japanese pottery repair, but it's more than that. It's an idea, an art, a philosophy that says broken things can become more valuable, more beautiful. It speaks to breakage and repair becoming part of the history of an object rather than something to disguise. When pieced back together, the cracks are honored and celebrated. These broken things are pieced back together with gold. The magician in me loves the restoration, just like sawing someone in half. There is life, death, and rebirth. The day I broke, I didn't really know what to expect. I kind of expected the entire place to be painted all white, with cage grates over the windows, and a giant brooding Native American man standing in the corner. It wasn't. It was more like a college dorm, a very sad, if brightly decorated, college dorm. I was sitting in the common room, reading my book, when this guy, apropos of nothing, walks up to me and says that he's a Ghostbuster. And he starts humming the Ray Parker Jr. song. Then he stops and says that he's also the Marshmallow Monster, and then just walks away. I wanted to stand up and say, hey, that is not a Marshmallow Monster. That is Gozer the Gozerian in the chosen destructor form of the Stay Puft Marshmallow Monster. I didn't. I was just too sad to care about getting into a nerd rage over it. I was diagnosed with single episode major depressive disorder. I was committed for suicidal ideation because at one point I was married and then I wasn't. And in the grossest understatement of my life, I did not handle it well. What finally broke the last strings of my sanity wasn't the emotional abuse or even the infidelity. What finally did me in was the day she packed up and left. It was April, April 1st, 2009, April Fool's Day, which I figured made me the punchline to a very cruel cosmic joke. Looking back, however, it kind of makes sense that's how it would have ended. We laughed a lot together. We loved making each other laugh. She often teased that she was going to change her married name to Lugosi, and I teased that between her and her twin sister, I felt deeply and madly in love with the evil twin. No one was more surprised than I was when 10 months later, 10 months of unchecked sadness and despair, I found myself standing over the kitchen sink holding a chef's knife to my throat, thinking I should probably do this in the bathtub instead because it would be easier to clean up for whoever found me. Spoiler alert, I didn't do it. I survived. To quote my favorite Night Court character, I'm feeling much better now. But standing over that kitchen sink, the only thing I felt was empty. I did not want to die. I just wanted the pain to stop. However, in a moment of self-preservational clarity, I called a friend. That friend got me to an emergency room. That emergency room assigned a security guard to sit in a chair at the foot of my bed, just to watch me, which I can only imagine is the easiest and most annoying gig he had to do that day. Many hours later, I was transferred to the Presbyterian Hospital for Psychiatry and Mental Health in White Plains, New York. I was assigned to Ward 6C, a locked dorm for nonviolent, non-psychotic patients. It was February 2nd, Groundhog Day. Everything I had on me was searched and cataloged for contraband. I was not allowed to wear a belt or shoelaces. I was not allowed to have my Nintendo DS or the jumbo coin prop I was using to learn some sleight of hand with. I was allowed to keep my deck of cards, a notebook and a pen, and my copy of Jim Steinmeier's The Last Greatest Magician in the World, Howard Thurston versus Houdini and the Battles of the American Wizards. This is a very good book. I read it very, very slowly. Not because it was a particularly hard book to get through, but because it was my only book to get through. It's the true story of a turn-of-the-century magician who overcomes great adversity, struggles with overwhelming trials and tribulations, to become billed as the greatest magician in the world. Believe me, the irony is not lost on me. Also, the similarities do not end there. He had a very troubled and abusive childhood, as did I. He engaged in criminal activity early in his life, as did I. He was almost institutionalized. Well, I guess that's where I have him be. I spent my entire 2 weeks in Ward 6C keeping mostly to myself, which is unsurprisingly easy when you're in a dorm filled with sad people. I have no idea how other psychiatric hospitals work. I've only been to one. But this place was pretty awesome. The ward was spacious. There were 5 meals a day, nap time in the afternoon, 2 large screen TVs, a movie and popcorn every night, tons of books and board games, arts and crafts sessions. I didn't have to do anything. I didn't have to think or be responsible for anything. Plus, twice a day, they gave me drugs. This place was great. If I wasn't so damn sad, I probably would have had a wonderful time there. Asylums are wasted on the crazy. But then again, it's probably the first time in history when a magician escaped into a straitjacket. But I was in misery. Convinced, like it was a fact, like water is wet and ice is cold, that I was broken. Broken and utterly beyond repair. Certain that I was worthless. Certain that I had, in fact, married the evil twin. In 15th century Japan, the art of kintsukuri was so popular that many lords and high-ranking members of society were accused of breaking priceless ceramic objects just so that they could be repaired with gold. That sort of misses the point, doesn't it? It's one thing to embrace that which is flawed and imperfect, but not if you broke it on purpose. Breaking something on purpose is just mean. One day I walk into the dining room for the midday snack. I get a carton of milk and a plate of cookies. These were oatmeal soft baked cookies in the shape of a heart with pink frosting and red sprinkles. That's when, probably for the first time, I noticed the calendar on the wall. Then, 2 things happened at the exact same time. I immediately began to laugh hysterically and cry uncontrollably, which, in a psych ward, is a justifiable cause for serious concern for the medical staff. I was all right, though. I just simply became aware of the month and day. It was February. February 14th. I was laughing and crying because I was sitting in a mental institution, brought there because of suicidal fantasies, stemming from severe depression, from the collapse of my marriage, on Valentine's Day. I don't know what it is about minor national holidays, but I seem to have life-altering events happen. Just ask me about the Arbor Day incident sometime. So I'm sitting there drinking milk and eating these delicious cookies with crumbs and tears falling from my face, and my mind is flooded with thoughts. I'm thinking of my life. I'm thinking that it just might be possible that maybe I wasn't beyond repair. Anyone who can recognize the ridiculousness of their given situation, no matter how tragic, and laugh, can be put back together. Laughter is the gold of my life. For 10 months, I stopped laughing. It's up to me to fill those cracks in my heart with all the golden, hilarious moments that life provides, and I can't do that if I'm dead. I'm thinking of my ex-wife. I'm thinking there might be a possibility, maybe, just maybe, she wasn't evil. Maybe she was just dealing with her own marshmallow monsters. Maybe she was just trying to bust her own personal ghosts, and this was, unfortunately for me, the only way she knew how. Kintsuke Roy says, not only is it okay, but it is necessary to the human condition that we acknowledge that we are all perfectly imperfect. We are flawed, we are fragile, we crack, we break. And that is not a source of shame, but one of pride and strength. We may break over and over again, but never in any place that has already been repaired with gold. The very next day, I filled out the paperwork to check myself out. It's many years since that day in the hospital, and my experience there has shaped and colored everything I've done since then. But I gotta tell you, after everything I've been through, and all the work to get from there to here, I still think about Ward 6C. Not the place, per se, but because those were the best damn cookies I've ever had.
That's it. Thanks for joining us for this installment of Know You Tell It.
Visit us on the web at knowyoutellit.com.